Share a screen. Okay. So welcome to the Washington Heights congregation. This is our weekly Gemara share. Okay, Chevra, Yasher Koach. What we have to talk about tonight is a Gemara that we kind of encountered once before, but we encountered it in Dav Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara had a whole list of authorities who said that a sukkah is diras keva, that a sukkah is considered some sort of permanent structure. We had a list of those authorities. And one of those authorities is what we have now in the Mishnah on Yutes Amud Beis. So if you pick up in the Mishnah writes, ha'osa sukaso kemin tsarif. If a person makes the sukkah like a tsarif, Rashi tells me that a tsarif is like a kuch shel tsayadin. It's basically the home of the bird trappers where they trap birds, and it's made like a hive. Asoy ki kaveres, she mishapas v'holeches, she gago v'kirosav echad. Basically, it is something where people trap birds that's made in a way that the roof and the walls are one. It's basically what we would call a teepee, no?
Yeah, a tent.
It's a pointy structure.
Yeah.
So if you make your sukkah like a pointy teepee-like structure, which means that you have the walls and the roof is one. When the walls and the roof is one, I have a challenge, which is I don't know what's the wall, I don't know what's the roof. Because wall goes straight into roof. I don't know which is which. So right. The question comes up, what's the halacha of a sukkah when it's like that? Ha'osa sukaso kamin sarif, osha samcha lakotel. Alternatively, you could have the same thing, that the sukkah is leaning against the wall. So let's say my hand over here is a wall, and my sukkah is a diagonal leaning against the wall. Once again, I don't know what is wall. I don't know what is schach. So Rabbi Eliezer posel mipnei she'in lagag v'chachomim machshirin. Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible because you don't have a roof, right? You don't have a roof, and therefore it is a problem. The chachomim say it's kosher. Now, Rashi over here writes she'in lagag. Lefisha in Lagag, the last Rashi in the Mishnah, Rashi's she'eno nikar mahu gag umahu kotel, because it's not recognizable what is a roof and what is a wall. The oho meshupa lav ohehu el imkin yishmo tefal zakuf kiketani vebraisa. Basically, a leaning tower or a leaning tent is not a tent. That's Rashi's comment. It's interesting that the beginning of Rashi sounds like this halacha is entirely rabbinic. The beginning of Rashi says, "Eino nikar." It's not recognizable what's a roof and what's a wall. But later on, Rashi, the next two words, Rashi already says that the issue is more fundamental. That according to Rabbi Eliezer, the reason why, if I have a sukkah that is like a teepee, where I have a sukkah that's just leaning against the wall, the reason why it's no good, Rashi says, is because ohel meshupa is not a good ohel, leaning tent, a slanted tent is not halachically a tent. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, what we saw earlier in the Gemara and of Zion and Beis sounds like almost a third reason, right? Over here, Rashi has two reasons. One reason is you can't tell what's the wall and what's the ceiling. The second reason we said is the fundamental reason. The ohel meshupa is not an ohel, that a slanty tent lacks the halachic characteristics of a tent. The Gemara on Zayin Amud Beis sounded like the reason is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you require diras keva. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the status of a sukkah has to be more substantial than it does according to the Chachamim. Now, that's not contradicted by what we're saying over here. In other words, that line on Daf Zayin Amud Beis is simply saying that, you know what, it has to be more substantial, it has to be more keva. And because it has to be more keva, that's why you have to know the difference between a wall and a roof. That's why an ohel meshupa is not an ohel. That's why a slanty tent is not a tent. Right? It's all based on this global concept that we had on Daf Zayin called the requirement for Diras Keva, which Rabbi Eliezer agrees to. That was what Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah Daf Beis, et cetera, et cetera. Right? All these ideas go way back to our youth, like when we learned Daf Beis in a Masechah Sukkah, which was like on Shabbos Parashas Bereishis, quite some time ago, even before a pandemic. Okay, so that's what we have so far. Tana, right? Gemara begins. Tana, we learned. Moter Rabbi Eliezer, Shem Higbia min Hakarka Tefach, O Hifliga min Hakotel Tefach, Shehik Sheva. Again, Rabbi Eliezer says it's no good. The Braisa says that Rabbi Eliezer agrees if it is raised one tefach off the ground, or hifliga min hakotel tefach, or it is separated from the wall one tefach, in that case, it's going to be kosher. Right? Let's just talk about the two cases. Remember, right? Let's talk about a slanty sukkah. Right? Instead of the teepee case where you have two slants that just connect, we're talking about one slanty sukkah against the wall. Zok the Gemara, that Rabbi Eliezer agrees if you have a tefach at the bottom. If at the bottom you have one straight tefach and then the slant begins, then it's going to be kosher. Alternatively, if you have a slanty wall, but it is not touching the wall, there is a tefach of flat ceiling space between them, that's also going to be kosher. That's what the Gemara says. Again, the reasoning over here is relatively, it's relatively not hard to understand. I don't say relatively easy. It's relatively not hard. The reason is that we've been discussing a case where you have a lack of differentiation between the wall and the ceiling. So long as I have something which is a wall, for sure, is a wall in the bare minimum size of a wall, one tefach. That's not even a wall for sukkah purposes. For sukkah purposes, the wall has to be 10 tefach. This is one tefach. It's a tiny little thing. That's good enough, right? Also, if I have one tefach as a ceiling, that is also good enough, right? Because in that case, I can distinguish between the wall and the and the roof, right? That's the basic idea in the Gemara. Now, Rashi's comment is, right? Rashi comments that Ohem Hirchika, you see this Rashi, it's like the top Rashi after I scrolled, Ohem Hirchika, Asamcha al hakotel kai. We're talking about the case where the where it's leaning against the wall, where the sukkah is leaning against the wall. Imhirchik rosh hasamach lakotel mikotel tefach. If you have a distance between the top of the wall that's near the top of the sukkah slanty thing, my beautiful example, my sukkah slanty thing. If I have a tefach between the sukkah slanty thing and the wall, the haisa simucha al yasedos, and it's leaning on poles, on pegs, then aminan lovan mimenu ulakotel b'shaveh velo b'shipu'a v'hu hagag. We say the principle of lavud, right? We had this principle of lavud beforehand. Lavud is our halachic principle that lets us fill in space. If I space us in three tvachim, I fill it in based on my rule of lavud. That's what I do. Now, what Rashi is telling me is, if I have my wall, and my wall is, or my sukkah, right? It's a slanty sukkah thing, and it's near the wall, but there's one tefach between them. So I could fill that tefach in. I use my halachic imagination and I fill the tefach in and it's okay. But Rashi tells me that I fill the tefach in straight, not slanty. Meaning, when I fill the tefach in, let's say this is the wall, right? My slanty, beautiful thing. So I'm not sure what's wall, what's roof, because it's a slant. So lavud, if it's within three tefachim of the wall, lavud says I fill it in. Which way do I fill it in? Do I draw an imaginary line directly from in the same vector, the same direction as my slanty schach is? Or do I fill it in straight? Rashi tells me that I fill it in straight. I do not fill it in, right? I do not use my imaginary wall, my lavud principle, to continue in the same direction that my slanty wall is. I need some terminology. Is this clear? Or
so is Rashi saying that lavud doesn't work?
No, Rashi's saying that lavud does work, but lavud works only straight. It doesn't work slanty. I don't extend the slanty part. Rashi says that lavud works, but instead of saying that it goes like this, the lavud goes like this. That's what
it has
Rashi.
To be straight.
It has to be straight.
Okay.
Now, this issue actually comes up. This issue actually comes up very often in Erevin. You see, we're fortunate, which is that we live in New York City. Erevin in New York City, in a weird, paradoxical way, Margie will forgive me for saying this, but Erevin in New York City are better than Erevin in suburban communities in one way. Again, New York City has its issues with Erevin, which is that's a large city. Maybe you can't build an Erevin in a large city. But in suburban communities, you have Erevin, which are built by using telephone poles, no? In New York City, right, all of our telephone wire is underground. All of our electrical wire in New York City is underground, correct? You live in 99% of this planet. Your electrical wire and your telephone wire are above ground. So Erev builders don't like building string. They don't like tying rope because it's expensive. You may as well use something that's a pre-existing structure. So what they do in suburban communities is they use the telephone wire, let's say, as the string for the Erev. Remember, when I talk about Erev, I'm talking about the Tzuras HaPesach, that imaginary door frame that goes all around town, right? You have post, and the thing on top, that's a Tzuras HaPesach, goes all the way around town. That's how we make an Erev. So in most of the world, you have, let's say, my beautiful pen, which is a telephone wire, and there are telephone poles. The telephone pole doesn't really work as the post for the Erev because the telephone pole sticks up above the telephone wire. And as a matter of halacha, there's a halacha that Tzuras HaPesach min hatzad. If you have the post that's on the side, it has to be directly on the top. If it's on the side, it's no good. So telephone wires don't count as an Erev. That's the standard approach. If you live in an area where you have electrical wires, usually electrical wires actually run up all the way very, very high and tall. So that's a much better way of making an Erev. The problem is those usually don't surround the entire community. Those only go on like one or two sides. Okay, all is grand. So you live in a suburban area. We'll create a fictional community. We'll call it Bergenfield, right? Fictional community, Teaneck Bergenfield. We just invented it right now. And in this fictional community, you have telephone wire that you want to use as an Erev. The telephone pole doesn't count because it's on the side. So what I do is I take a piece of plastic stripping or the like, and I bang my plastic stripping into the telephone pole so that it is directly underneath the telephone wire. And that counts as the Tzuras HaPesach. The halacha is that Tzuris HaPesach Ein Tzarech Liga, that the post over here does not have to touch the wire on top. Right? Even if there is a distance between them, it's good. Tzuris HaPesach Ein Tzarech Liga. So I bang a piece of wood, or usually we use plastic stripping. You bang it in to the telephone pole, and it's right underneath the telephone wire, and everything is grand. Well, here's the thing. Over time, plastic stripping and wooden boards that are banged into telephone poles, over time, they warp and they bend. When they bend, they are not going to be directly under the wire. Then I have a question, how do I draw my lavud? I have a question of how do I draw my imaginary line to the wire on top? Right? Usually we assume the line goes straight up. But once that board curves, so then our Rashi would sound like, right, you draw the line directly this way, right? You don't go straight up anymore. And that could create a big issue with Erevin. That's why the better Erevin in the New Jersey area and all the communities that use telephone wire make sure that that piece of plastic that they bang into the telephone pole, they make sure that touches the telephone wire itself. If there's any space between them, the concern is that's going to bend. And if it bends in the way, it bends in the direction, it could be it's not going to be right underneath that wire. And therefore, it's no good. The principle of lavud or of good asik, all of these principles basically are straight up and down, right? Straight side by side. We don't do it in a diagonal sort of way. Again, these issues come up every, what we say in Yiddish, mitvach and darnishtik. Every Wednesday and Thursday, these issues come up. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so far so good?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So Rashi tells me that if I have my wall, I have my, again, this thing, let's call it leaning schach. The schach is leaning against the wall, so it's a problem. That's what Rabbi Eliezer says. Because I don't know what's wall and what is schach. What's wall, what's roof. But if I have one tefach between the leaning wall and the actual physical wall, then it's okay. Rashi sounds like that one tefach need not be filled in. Rashi is saying that I say lavud, right? I use my imaginariness, right? I fill it in imaginarily. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos comments, look at the Tosfos She'im Higbiya, the Tosfos towards the bottom. You make the building one tefach straight. And you put the the leaning thing at the bottom. Again, it's instead of being leaning the whole way, you have first one tefach straight and then it leans. Something like that, right? That's the case. Similarly, if I'm one tefach away from the wall, next to the wall, I make schach that is filled of one tefach. And the top of the slant is on the schach. What Tosfos is saying is that I really have three things over here. I have my wall. I have my slanty thing. And between my wall and my slanty thing, Tosfos says, I have schach. I fill it in with right, that little area in between. That tiny space is filled in with schach. That's what Tosfos says. Umitoch lashon ha-kuntris mashma, right, from Rashi, it sounds like. It's, again, the third line into this Tosfos She'im. Umitoch lashon ha-kuntris mashma, the oso tefach she-higbiya hirchik afilu hu avir Kishera. Rashi sounds like even if that space is air space, it's kosher. Tosfos said you have to fill it in with schach. You take your bulrushes and your bamboo and whatever uses schach and you fill it in. That's what Tosfos says. Rashi sounds like even if that area is airspace, it's kosher. D'nechshavu kesatum mitam lavod, because lavod makes it like it is sealed in. The pirish hakuntris, emhirchik rosh hasamuch lekotel min hakotel tefach. Rashi says, if it is one tefach away from the wall, v'haisa smucha al yisedos, and it's leaning on some pegs, uktza kama, kama, period. In other words, Tosis is saying that Rashi sounds like, some of the Achrayim, by the way, the Aruch Laner says, what does Tosis mean? Rashi sounds like. Rashi says that explicitly. But Rashi says, or sounds like, that you have airspace between the slanty wall and the actual wall. Airspace between that thing that I want to be the sukkah and the actual wall. Tosis says, I don't have airspace, but I actually fill it in with schach. And then Tosis adds, uktsas mashmakim birushalmi, right? Two lines on the bottom of this Tosis she'im. It sounds like this in the Yerushalmi. The Garcin and Moder Rabbi Eliezer Chachamim Shem Haisa Nesuna Al Arba Avonim. Oh, Haisa Gavoa Min Haaretz Posea Tefach Ksheva. Right, I just changed the text a little bit. The way the Grah changes the text over here on the side. Basically, the Yerushalmi says that if it's on top of stones or it is one tefach above the ground, it is kosher. What that means is that it is kosher based on lavud. If it is one tefach from the ground, it's not filled in. I didn't build a structure that it's straight. It is just within lavud. And therefore, Taisa says, you see, it's kosher. Lavud allows me to fill it in and make it kosher. So let's just pause for a second, then we'll talk about this. There's a dispute between Rashi and Tosis about this case where Rabbi Eliezer, who says that a slanty wall is puzzle, right? Because as we know it, you don't know the difference between the wall and the slach. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's puzzle, but Rabbi Eliezer agrees that if it's one tefach straight or one tefach on the top, then it's going to be kosher. Zaktaisvis. According to me, that one tefach has to be filled in. But Rashi says, one tefach of lavud is good enough. I could use my halachic imagination to fill it in. That's what Rashi says. Tosa says, don't use no halachic, no imagination. Fill it in the real sort of way. That's what Tosis comments. Grand. Now, obviously, Rashi and Tosos seem to be disagreeing about the nature of lavud, no? This halacha, that when anything is less than three tvachim, so therefore what happens? There are two possibilities, right? You could bring the mountain to Muhammad, you combine them. By the way, I have no idea where that expression comes from. I assume it has something to do with the Quran or whatever. But one possibility is that, like, they connect. The other possibility is that you fill in the gap. No? Lavud. The two things within three tfachim. You see my fingers? Right? They're within three tfachim. Either lavud tells me that they connect, or lavud tells me that I fill it in. Rashi says that lavud means you fill it in. And therefore, according to Rashi, once I fill it in, I have a tefach of a ceiling, and that's good enough. Tosis says, no, no, no. Lavud doesn't mean you fill it in. Lavud means you connect. If lavud means that you connect it, so then you don't gain anything. Because if your problem is that you have a slanty wall, right? And you're not sure what's wall, what's ceiling. So it's one tefach away from the wall. Well, if you connect it, so now you still don't know what's wall, what's ceiling. According to Rashi, if I fill it in, now I have one tefach of ceiling. So that makes sense. It's a little interesting, though, that according to Rashi, when you use your halachic imagination to fill it in, apparently you're filling it in with kosher schach substance, right? To fill it in with stuff that's not kosher schach wouldn't seem to accomplish all that much. You get an impression from Rashi that you're actually filling it in with kosher schach, and that's why it's good. Okay. So let's just go back to what we're up to. Rashi says that you have a wall that's straight, and you have this slanty thing that's made out of schach material. Rashi says it's going to be kosher as long as it's within one tefach of airspace. Meaning, according to Rashi, if it's in one tefach of airspace, lavur is enough to make a ceiling. Tosa says, no, lavur means that you connect. It doesn't mean you fill in. That's a machlekes Rashi and Tosfos. But Tosfos also quotes that there's a Yerushalmi that sounded like Rashi. Right? The Yerushalmi, right? Let's just read again two lines in the bottom of the Tosfos. Uktsas mashma came Yerushalmi. It sounds a little bit from the Yerushalmi like this. The Yerushalmi says, "Degarsin the moder Rabbi Yezma Chachomim shem haysen the sun al arba avonim. Oh, haysa gavom in the arts kol sea tefach sheva." Shalmi says, if it is one tefach over the ground, one tefach above ground, it's going to be kosher. That's what Yerushalmi says. That means that it's not 1,000,000% clear from the Yerushalmi. Tosfos says it's a little indicative, ketsas mashma from the Yerushalmi, meaning what Tosfos is saying is there might be a difference, and this is a point that Rav Soloveitchik made in his Shiurim. There might be a difference between the bottom and the top. Right? If I have the wall and it's one tefach above the ground, right? So maybe over there we'll say lavud and we'll fill it in. But maybe that's different than at the top that you want to fill it in. You see, at the bottom, the halacha of lavud might be a different sort of halacha. The halacha of lavud at the bottom might mean that land is ordinarily not perfectly flat. There's always bumps and stuff in the ground. So the land is not always perfectly flat. So it's entirely possible that we have to say lavud at the bottom. But it could be that at the top, maybe I don't say lavud. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, if you read the Rambam, in Perek Dalet Halacha Zayin, the Rambam sounds that way. The Rambam says that towards the top, you got to fill it in with schach. But at the bottom, as long as, even if it's just hovering over the ground within three tefachim, that is still good enough, etc. That's the basic idea that we're getting at. When Tosfos says, Kitsas Mashem from the Yerushalmi, that's probably what Tosfos means. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so far so good. I feel like I'm talking too much. I always get worried when I talk too much, especially on the Zoom share, that that might mean that who knows what. But we'll try to.
I actually have a question on the Tosfos.
Good.
So what about if the distance on the top was four tefachim, and it would be filled with schach? That would be just as good. It would be six tefachim. It would be just as good.
Yeah.
So, 100%. So the question is why then it doesn't make sense to say it's only a tefach, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you read it like Tosfos.
Oh, now that you're asking, how come if according to Tosfos you have to fill it in with schach, why do we say one tefach, even if it would be two tefachim, three tefachim, four tefachim, if fill in with schach, it's okay? That's your question.
Yes.
So it seems to me that what Tosfos is saying is like this, that even if it's only a tefach, the more you have filled in, the more it looks like a real roof. It looks like you have real schach. But even if you have only one tefach, that still is good enough.
Okay. So it seems also that Rashi does not extend the schach. Rashi brings the wall a tefach closer.
So here's the thing. Well, if it would just be that you connect them, then it should not help, because there's no difference if it's touching like this, which doesn't help, right? Or if the halacha makes it like it touches. My understanding is that according to Rashi, the halacha fills it in. So now I have a little bit of ceiling. And once I have a little bit of ceiling, then I could say, oh, So I have some ceiling and I have some a wall. That's going to be okay. That's the way I understand it, according to Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So far, so good. Let's go on, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. I know that one person, at least on the Zoom call tonight, had grand jury duty and was quite unimpressed with the way it was handled. But hopefully members of the Shear jury will be more impressed by the way the Shear progresses. Okay, Zuck the Gemara. Let's go on. So Rabbi Eliezer says that if it's one tefach over the ground, it's kosher, or if it's one tefach away from the wall, it's kosher. Now the Gemara analyzes the Mishnah. My time, my who, the Rabbonon. What's the reason for the Rabbonon? Remember, in our Mishnah, the Chachomim say, the Rabbonon say in our Mishnah that it's kosher, that the leaning bit, that area which is schach up against the wall, let's say, or a teepee shaped, is kosher according to the Chachomim. Why is that? My time, my who, the Rabbonon? Because shipuwe oholim ke oholim dummy. Because slanty tents are like tents. That's a halachic question. What is the definition of a tent? Al pi halacha, is a slanty thing also considered a tent? The Chachomim say shipuwe oholim ke oholim. Slanty tents are tents. Okay, grand. Abaye, it's like towards the top. Abaye ashkechi l'Rav Yosef to kagani b'kilat chatanim besuka. Abaye finds Rav Yosef who is sleeping in a canopy bed in the sukkah. Right? So Abaye, remember, learned Rav Yosef is his Rebbe. And he sees that his Rebbe is sleeping in the canopy in the sukkah. Amarle, so he says to him, Keman, ki Rabbi Eliezer. Are you going like Rabbi Eliezer? Shav kis Rabbonon v'avdis ki Rabbi Eliezer? Are you deserting the Chachomim in the place of Rabbi Eliezer? Remember, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that a slanty roof is pasul as a sukkah. A slanty wall slash roof doesn't count as a sukkah. Why? Because it's not a tent. Okay, grand. Well, if it's not a tent, so therefore when you sleep in the kilat chatanim, when you're in the sukkah and you sleep in a canopy bed and it's all slanty, you're assuming like Rabbi Eliezer that a slanty thing does not count as a ohel, it doesn't count as a tent, and therefore it's the same as if you'd be sleeping directly in the sukkah. You're not sleeping in some other thing, not in the sukkah. It's like you're sleeping in the sukkah, right? If you hold like the chachamim, so then what you're doing is you are in a tent inside the sukkah. And if I'm in a tent inside the sukkah, so then I am not yotzei my mitzvah of sukkah. But because you hold like Rabbi Eliezer, right, that's how Baye says to Rav Yosef, oh, you obviously hold like Rabbi Eliezer, and that's why you are doing this. I'm like, come on, who are you going like Rabbi Eliezer? Shavkis Rabbonon, the Avdis Rabbi Eliezer, are you going to leave the rabbis and follow Rabbi Eliezer? That's a problem. Right? It's especially a problem because Rabbi Eliezer is Shamuti. The Gemara tells us in a number of places that Rabbi Eliezer was put in Chayrim. We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, ever, or almost ever. We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara is saying that Abaye asks Rav Yosef, why are you doing this? You're following Rabbi Eliezer? That's not proper. So Amalei, so he responded, Braisa Ipratani. Rabbi Eliezer, Machshir Bechachom and Poslim. Rav Yosef said, you know why I'm doing this? I'm not following Rabbi Eliezer. I'm following the Chachamim. Because I have a braisa, I have a source that says the opposite way. My source says that the Chachamim say it's no good. If the Chachamim say it's no good, so therefore that means the Chachamim are the ones who say that a slanty tent is not halachically a tent. So I'm following the Chachamim. I'm not following Rabbi Eliezer. Now he says, I have a brais ipchatani, that Rabbi Eliezer says it's kosher, Chum says it's puzzle. So the Gemara asks, Abaye asks Rabbi Yosef, Shafkas masnisin, Va'avdas kibraisa. How come you would leave the Mishnah and follow a braisa? You have to remember, a Mishnah is an edited text. Right? What were Mishnayos? Mishnayos were that Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi goes around Eretz Yisrael and he collects the notes of all the students. Right? There was a time in Jewish history when it's forbidden to write down Torah Shabbat Al-Peh. Right? This past week's parasha, Parshas Kisisa. Ksov l'chas ha-drama, ela ke'al-pi ha-drama, ela karati yitcha bris v'as Yisrael. Write down. That means, write the Torah Shabbat Ksav. Torah Shabbat Al-Peh is supposed to be oral, not written. There weren't a lot of write down Torah Shabbat Al-Peh, but that meant you can't teach Torah Shabbat Al-Peh from a written text. Obviously, every student, his and her own, would go and they would learn and they would take notes from the teacher. They take notes in the Rebbe. What Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi did, he did not write Mishnayos. People make a mistake. They say Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi wrote Mishnayos. He didn't write Mishnayos. Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi collected the notes of all the students and he made those notes into Mishnayos. That means that what he was really doing is he was collecting notes and he was organizing them and editing them and making them into a Mishnah. There was a lot of notes that he didn't collect, or if he collected, he didn't edit. So those notes are what we call braises. And those braises are not well edited. Right? Some of those braises become the Tosefta of Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia that appears in the back of the Gemara. Other braises are found in other collections, like in the collections of Levi and stuff like that, Bar Kappara. But whatever the collections were, it wasn't as well edited as the collected notes of Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. So the Gemara is asking, one second, Shafkas Masnisin, Va'avda Kibraisa. How can you leave the Mishnah and follow the Braisa? When the Mishnah is an edited, wonderful, beautiful text, right? The Braisa is unedited, less wonderful, less beautiful. How can you do that? So Amalei, so Rav Yosef responded, no. Masnisin yichida ahi. Our Mishnah is the work of a single Tana, Ditanya. Meaning, Rav Yosef's Mishnah has that our Mishnah is what Rabbi Nosson said. So our Mishnah is a single authority. Our Mishnah has Rabbi Nosson reporting that Rabbi Eliezer says it's no good and the Chachamim say it is good. But that's the reporting of that single authority called Rabbi Nosson. Rav Yosef said, I'd rather side with a braisa, even though the braisa is not a well-edited text, but I'd rather side with a braisa over a Mishnah that is only going according to a single opinion. That's basically what the Gemara says. Okay. So when all the dust settles on this Gemara, Rav Yosef did something. He slept in a canopy in a sukkah, which means that he assumes that a slanty tent is not halachically a tent. And therefore, when he's sleeping in the canopy, he is still inside the sukkah, because the thing that he's inside is not a something, right? So if it's not a something, it's a nothing. And if it's a nothing, he's inside the sukkah. Right? That's what Rav Yosef did. And that means as a matter of halacha we paskin, that slanty tents are not tents. But we saw the line in the Gemara earlier that if you have a wall that's at least one tefach and then it slants, then it's going to be okay. Or if you have a slanty roof, but it's one tefach away from the, right? If you have either skach of a tefach or airspace of a tefach, according to Rashi, then it's going to be okay. So if you have one tefach straight at the bottom or one tefach straight at the top, it's going to be okay, right? Because that's the halacha. Slanty straight up, no good. But if it is one tefach flat somewhere, bottom or top, that's going to be okay. I remember as a kid, I grew up across the street from a reform shul. There was a ref I grew up on Central Avenue in Lawrence, and there was a Reform temple across the street called Temple Israel. And as kids, we always used to make fun of Temple Israel. Ha ha ha, the Reform Jews, their sukkah has a slanty roof. Right? Most roofs in our world, right, are slanty, no? In our world, I mean, like, yeah, I think probably in our world, most roofs are slanty. Most sukkahs are flat roof. And like as kids, we always make fun. Oh, the Reformed temple has like a slanty roof and it should be pasul, it should be pasul. We just learned the halacha. A slanty roof is not pasul as a sukkah at all, no? A slanty roof, if all you have is a teepee, all you have is a slant, then it's a problem. But if you have a wall and then it slants, that's the way they did it in the Reformed temple. They had a wall straight up. It's actually beautiful. They had like flowers. As the whole, they had like hedges with like flowers all the way around. And then they had like a slanty roof on top as their sukkah. You know, looked beautiful. So as kids, we were wrong. Hashamnu bagadnu, al-chait, al-chait, al-chait. We were like making fun of the Reform sukkah across the street. But really, it was fine. You can have a slanty roof as long as it is one tefach straight at the bottom or one tefach flat at the top. It's going to be okay. Let me just do one more analogy of this halacha, which comes up. You know, there's a halacha of mezuzah, right? We have a mezuzah on our doorways. Now, a doorway has to be a mezuzah and a mashkof, right? You have a vertical and a horizontal, right? Two verticals and a horizontal. That's a door post. What about if you have an archway? Is an archway chayiv in the mezuzah? On some level, if you have an archway, you have the same problem that we have, no? You don't know what is mezuzah, what's mashkof, what's ceiling, what's wall. Now, obviously, if you have most of our archways, are not like that. No, most of our archways is very clear that it's straight and then it curves. But if you have an archway, I think like, what's it called? The Gateway to the West in St. Louis? No, that's like the whole thing is curved, correct? It's like one, it's like, I think that's what
Not
it's,
sure. I'm not sure.
I think that's what it's called. I think if I'm not mistaken, the whole thing is curved. So then you would have the same issue in terms of Hilchos Mezuzah that you're not sure where to put it because you don't know. What is ceiling? What is mashkof? And what is wall? The same issue would come up. Okay, let's do one more taisis here. Why not? Ha'osa sukkaso kemin saref. We'll do one more taisis. If I make the sukkah like a tsaref, here. B'chi hai gav na'ayri, zok taisis, we're talking about a case. Hashipua begova asara ika adayin bimeshech sukkah rochav zayin de beinyan acher lomachshiri rabbonon de habinon gavoa asara bimeshech zayin begova yod. Okay, Tosis is saying that when I have a slanty. When I have a slanty sukkah, right? So according to the Chachamim, it's going to be kosher, the Chachamim Bar Mishnah. According to Rabbi Eliezer, in the Braisa, it's going to be kosher. Zok Taisus, though, can only be kosher if you meet the regular rules of sukkah, which means that you have to be 7 by 7. The bare minimum size of a sukkah is 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So therefore, Tosfos says that when I have my slanty thing, right, I want this slanty wall to be the entire sukkah. It's got to be that at the height point of 10 tefachim, you have 7 tefachim of space. Or above 10 tefachim, you have 7 tefachim of space. Because if you have less than 7 tefachim of space, it's not a good sukkah. A sukkah, by definition, has to be 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So therefore, Tosafot says it can only be kosher if you have seven tefachim of space. At the 10 tefach mark, you have seven tefachim of space. That's what Tosafot says. Because if you don't have that, it's going to not be kosher. The efshar, and it's possible. Kishi yesha meshach zayin begoba yod, sha'af tachas hashipua, sha'en goba yod kshera, kevin shigesh badalid berochav. But zoktaisis, it could be that if you have seven tefachim wide at the height of 10, it's going to be kosher even underneath that mark of 10 tefachim. Because it is like psal hayotzei min hasukkah, according to Rabbi and Rav Yosef, who permit kanim hayotzei min lifnei hasukkah. Because it's like psal hayotzei min hasukkah, it's like sukkah extensions. Okay, I'm going to have to draw pictures for this. Let's go like this. Here's my wall, okay? And I have a slanty thing against the wall, and I want this thing to be a sukkah. And according to some opinions, according to the Chachomim in the Mishnah, it's kosher. But Taisa says, according to the Chachomim in the Mishnah, it's only going to be kosher if at the 10 tefach mark, which we'll say is right over here, you have at least seven tefachim. By seven. If you do not have seven, if let's say at the if let's say this would be the 10 tefach mark, and at this area I don't have seven, this area let's say I only have three, then the whole sukkah is no good. Right? So if this would be the 10 tefach mark, then it's going to be kosher. That's what Tosafot says. Grand. Now, Tosafot then suggests efshar, it could be, that if it is seven at the 10 tefach mark, so even if I am sitting over here, I'm going to be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. Even if this is our person inside the sukkah, right, you're yotze the mitzvah of sukkah, although logically you'd say, how can you be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah? You are sitting underneath the wall. Because until the 10 tefach point, it becomes a wall. It's only after the 10 tefach point that it transforms miraculously and becomes ceiling. But Zaktaisis, it could be that you're still Yotze, based on that halacha that we encountered of Psal HaYotze Min HaSukkah. If you remember last week, we had this case, right? If this is my sukkah, right? So I have three walls over here. Everything is grand. But this area is sukkah extension. I only have like one wall over here. But the halacha allows me to extend my sukkah, right? And therefore, because it's some schach over here, we extend it all the way across. And therefore, this guy is in the sukkah. Right? That's what we saw it last week. So Tosafot says, based on this rule of sukkah extension, it could be that it's going to be kosher even though you seem to be under the wall, because this wall is basically like a sukkah extension. I view it like this is really the wall, and maybe this guy is inside the sukkah. I draw my lines like that. That's Tosafot's approach. Okay, so far what we have is one approach, the approach of Tosafot. That Tosafot says that it's got to be that you have, let's just clear the whole thing. Right, it's got to be, Tosafot says, that you are that you have seven tefachim wide at the area where it hits 10. Right, so we'll call this the position of Tosafot. Right, and when it's 10, you have at that area seven. That's Tosafot. The Ran has a different opinion. The Ran says, let's say this is my straight wall. And this is my slanty thing. The Ran says, so long as my slanty thing is a total of 17, it's okay. Even if there is no area, right, when it hits 10 tefachim, there's no area that's going to be seven wide. The Ran says, As long as you have 17, it's good. Because 17, I'll bifurcate. I'll say the first 10 is wall. The top 7 is roof. Again, according to those opinions, that a slanty sukkah is okay. Or even according to us, as long as I have one tefach that's straight over here. So I have one tefach. We'll do it like, we'll call it 1 and 16, right? So we have 1, 10, and 6, and everything is grand. That's the Ran. So Tosis says you need 10 tall. The Ran says all you need is a hypotenuse of 17, a hypotenuse of 16. That's the second opinion. The third opinion over here is the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam says that the hypotenuse is 10, and that's still okay. Now, that's a little bit difficult because those of us who went to high school and heard of this person named the Pythagorean, how do you pronounce it? Pythagorean, the Pythagorean?
Pythagorean.
Well, you heard about that theorem about A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
Pythagorean. Pythagorean.
Pythagorean?
Pythagorean, yeah.
Okay.
Pythagorean.
Okay, I will take your word on this one. But the funny thing about the Rambam is if the hypotenuse is 10, that means, who's my math major? It'll be around 7, right? 12.
No. 10? It depends.
Roughly right.
It depends on the angle.
What? It would be if it's...
It's a right triangle.
Right triangle. You're right triangle, but you can slide your hypotenuse any way you want. You can, you know, it's like if you have a ladder of 10
flashing, if you're assuming,
it depends on the angles.
If you're assuming that the sides are equal length, it would be approximately like, because 7 squared is 49.
Right. So
49 times 2 is 98.
Right, yeah.
So the square root of 98 is 10.
And the point is that according to the Rambam, right, the entire hypotenuse is 10. That means I do not have 7 by 7 at the top. No? The whole height of this is 7. So the Rambam's opinion has to be that when we say the minimum size of a sukkah, what I mean is at the bottom of the sukkah, I need 7. Mm. Unlike Tosfos, who assumes that when I talk about the minimum size of a sukkah, it has to be 7 at the top. The Rambam says that 7 is the minimum size of a sukkah based on the ground level. That's a fundamental machlokas, as Soloveitchik explained, between the Rambam and the rest of Judaism. Right? The Rambam assumes that even though you can't really sit in, 7 by 7 is supposed to be an area that I could sit in, that I could use. I can't really sit in this area because, right, I'm going to end up like squishing myself this way. I can't really fit in, right? My head is going to bump into this schach wall or whatever I have on the side. Still, for the Rambam, that's okay. As long as the ground level is 7 by 7, that's good enough. Tosfos, however, holds that it's going to only be good if you have 7 at the top, right? So according to Tosfos, right, the wall has to be in a way that when you reach 10 tefachim of the height, 10 tefachim, according to Tosfos, it has to be like this, that the moment I reach 10 tefachim height, you have at least 7 wide. Right, that's Tosfos. The Rambam is going to say that the entire hypotenuse is 10. That means you only have 7 at the bottom. Right, that's the way it works according to the Rambam. The fundamental machlokas is when they talk about a sukkah that is 7 by 7, as being the bare minimum size of a sukkah, does that mean 7x7 of usable space? That's what Tosfos assumes. The Rambam assumes that 7x7 is floor space. Right? It's 7x7 floor space, but you're going to have, you will not have 7x7 of usable space because it's, what's it called? Because you're going to be all squished. Now, I saw some of the Mefarshim ask on the Rambam, didn't we have a Gemara on Daf Hey that said that if something is a Dira Srucha, it's like a squishy dwelling area, that it's not good. I saw there's a book that I forgot I owned it. I must have bought it like 25 years ago. There's a fellow who wrote a sefer with his notes on Rav Soloveitchik Shiurim. It's called the Chidushei Basra and the Chidushei Hamazbir. This guy was like a Rosh Yeshiva, a Rebbe. I shouldn't say Rosh Yeshiva. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, a Rebbe in Rabbi Scheinberg's Yeshiva in Torah Or in Mattisdorf. And he got his hands on notes of Rav Soloveitchik Shiurim. And he quotes the Rav. He doesn't quote the Rav by name. He just calls him the Mazbir. And he asks his questions on the Mazbir. That's his book. It's called the Chidushei Basra on the Mazbir. I don't know why I bought this book, but I bought it like 25 years ago. So I was putting my bookcase in my office collapsed. So they got me a new bookcase. And then as I'm reloading my bookcase, because I'm looking at my books, which, like, you know, when you have books in your office for like many years and you never look at them, you don't remember what they are. So I look at the books and I go, wow, that's interesting. It has Masechta Sukkah in here. So I looked at it. So he asks the question, how can it be kosher? Don't we know the halacha is that it's a dira srucha, right? We had a case, let's say your sukkah is 10 tefachim tall, but you have stuff that comes down, so you can't really sit there. So according to Tosfos, dira srucha is possible. So this guy asked, that how could it be that according to the Rambam, 7 tefachim floor space is good, that should be dira srucha, because you can't sit in it. The answer is that the Rambam actually holds that Dira Srucha is only a psul l'chatchila. The Rambam holds that this halacha of squishy space doesn't invalidate the sukkah entirely. For the Rambam, Dira Srucha is only a psul l'chatchila. Again, so these are some of the issues that we wanted to discuss. And are there any questions or comments or observations or otherwise?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting mathematics, though. It's all approximate, because really, it's 7√2 is not 10. So it's, yeah, like, you know.
Again, so I don't think you were in the shiur way back when we had an entire Gemara on Daf Ches where the Gemara approximated pi to be 3, or the Gemara didn't approximate pi. The Gemara says, yeah, pi is 3. We know pi is not 3. Pi is 3.14 ad infinitum, right? That's pi. But the Gemara says that pi is 3. Gemara numbers, the joke goes like this, that someone decides to build a house according to the specifications that it says in the Gemara, and the house collapses. So the person runs to the rabbi and says, Rabbi, I built a house according to what the Gemara said. How come it collapsed? So the rabbi said, oh, that's Tosfos's kasha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Very good, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Have a good night, Chevra. Thank you for coming to learn.